Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning. It is Friday morning, the 29th of June. And as we start our show each morning, we remind ourselves that as the sun is rising all around our country, that what is true and what will be true again tomorrow is that the empty tomb stands there as a witness to our faith as believers following a risen Lord who is real and active in our world. And because that tomb is empty, we always have hope and future in Jesus' beautiful kingdom. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined as always in studio by Logan Roush running the sound and the board, and Paul Perot and Rachel Sutton handling news and booking the great guests that we have each day. And you know, Logan, we talk obviously at the top of the hour so often about the headlines that are going to be present in our world. And of course, some listeners may be waking up not certain of all the details of what had happened, but heard of some troubling headlines on the East Coast.
It's been a difficult day. There has been a shooting in Annapolis, Maryland, which we'll of course be getting into today, which is so difficult to think about and a tough. It's such a topic that can make us fearful and afraid of what the next day holds for us. But there's always hope. There's always hope. Like we start every single day, just because terrible things are happening in our world doesn't mean the world is hopeless.
I was driving in this morning and just sort of thinking and praying and reflecting a little bit. And what came to mind was a Christian theologian of the 14th century. Her name was Julian of Norwich. She ministered in the UK. She was a bit of a Christian hermit. They were called anchoresses back then when they dedicated themselves to life in the kingdom and just interacting with God. And she was during a time of great turmoil in this world, too. It's not news that there's turmoil in this world. I mean, Jesus says that there is going to be suffering and turmoil and famine and pestilence, and all of these things will be part of the deal. And in her time, as she was dealing with the Black Plague and watching villages just get decimated by this disease, and she herself, she took up ill, and speculation is she even maybe lost her husband in that part of the process. But she came out in the midst of all of this very real pain and suffering, and she began to declare to the villages and to herself that all will be well, all will be well, and all manner of things shall be well. And she talked about being anchored in a kingdom in which there is a king who is real and whose future is secure. It doesn't mean that it's easy and these headlines are difficult. It just means that there is still some spark of hope that exists in the midst of all of it.
And that viewpoint and that mindset can be so hard to get into once you've experienced or been close to a tragedy. You don't want to hear, oh, it's going to be fine. And it's totally okay to have that grief for a moment, and that understanding of what just happened is incredibly effective to you and on your soul. But that doesn't make it any less true that there is something to look forward to.
Yeah. So for our listeners all over the Midwest, from Madison to Waterloo and Duluth and out to the East Coast and Hartford as well, just we're bonded together by a king of a kingdom. And in whatever's going on in the situations of our lives and the situations of our country, just remember each day that tomb is empty and Jesus is risen and there is hope and future. We'll take a short break. And when we come back, we'll be joined, as we always are on Friday mornings, delighted to be joined by Carmen LaBurge of Connecting Faith. And she can help talk us through some of these things as well. It's Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner. We'll be back in just a minute. And that, of course, is the Walk Up Music for Carmen LaBurge of Connecting Faith, a program here that airs at noon Central Time, 1 o'clock East Coast Time on Faith Radio. And Carmen, we were just listening to a little segment there about the five love languages. And I'm amazed at the staying power of this concept. I mean, that's been around in the churches for about 20-some years. Even my students in my classes are pretty familiar with the concept. And they've thought about whether it's, you know, service or these different languages. I often think, Carmen, and maybe you should do this, we need to write a sequel, five new love languages, because for me, it's like chocolate and golf and coffee would fall into those. I mean, do you have any love languages that we feel like we should add to this whole deal?
I don't know about adding love languages, but it is a powerful concept, I think, because it's true, and truth has staying power that nothing else does. My primary love language is acts of service. My husband's are words of affirmation. And so if you're a person like me who, you know, it's nice that people say nice things to me and about me, but it actually, that's not feeding anything in me. I mean, I'm not a words of affirmation person. But he is. And so you do have to train yourself to love other people as God has wired them to be loved. And so I would echo the chocolate and coffee love language that you just lifted up. Those would be on my list as well. But acts of service, you know, I don't know any other way to frame that in any greater truth or honesty to who I am.
You know, maybe we can bring these things together, actually. I mean, Logan, you could affirm me and bring me coffee all at the same time, and we'll just kind of work these things out.
Peter, you forgot your most important love language to add, constant harassment.
Oh, that's really true. Actually, I do feel at home. So, Carmen, obviously, we referenced some of the headlines, and one of the most prominent ones from yesterday is the troubling news of the shooting in the news organization out in Baltimore, and five people lost their lives and the difficulty of that. Talk us through, how are you processing? How are you responding to that this morning?
So journalists on Twitter are actually, you know, some folks with whom I engage on a regular basis. And so there may be a lot of people listening who you don't actually have a lot of personal contact with journalists in your community. That would be what I would recommend as a starting point today. If you don't know the journalists who are serving in your local community and all you have ever done or said in relationship to journalists, you know, sort of like nasty side comments or criticisms, today's the day to walk your Christianity out into the world and actually be grieving with those who are grieving and taking a stand, a real honest stand for the freedom of the press. It occurs to me, Peter, that journalists, they experience a lot of criticism almost on a constant basis. And so I want to encourage Christians to be praying for journalists, encouraging them, you know, and actually becoming what I would describe as media friendly. Now, people listening to that are going to be like, the media, you know, because they have this negative reputation. Here's the reality. You and I are a part of the media. And so if people appreciate that we bring them news and information every day and that we do so from a Christian worldview, we certainly hope that they're also praying for us. You know, we appreciate that people are listening and we appreciate that people are reading things at myfaithradio.com. But we're also appreciating that they pray for us. And I think we have to be very mindful today that a free and protected press is actually vital to the preservation of every other freedom. So you and I, as Christians who want the free exercise of our religion in every arena of life, we actually need to be supporting the press in their freedom as well. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of assembly, freedom of protest or redress. Those are actually all supported by the freedom of the press, which is also included in the First Amendment. So that's where I would encourage people to go today.
Well, and I think, you know, obviously we see the headlines that approval rating of journalists in the media, you know, it sinks to terrible lows, 20%, sometimes 22%. And so your words are, and I think for understandable reason that the approval rating is there for some outlets that are really trying to shape the social landscape, and they're not necessarily reporting news. They are actually trying to have people think a certain kind of way. But on the flip side, and to your point, Carmen, it's helpful to remember that we're living in a country right now that we couldn't, as a listening family here in the Midwest and in Hartford and the people streaming all over the country, that there's plenty of countries in the world that we couldn't even do what we do and gather together around the radio this morning as we wake up and are driving, getting our coffee, and even talk about the things of our faith in this way. We wouldn't be free to do that. And so there can be a flip side of this of gratefulness. And even if we disagree, you know, if you're a Fox News listener, for example, maybe pray for somebody at CNN or vice versa, that we're called as Christians to live from a different kind of place than getting swept up in a certain slant with the news.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you illuminate one thing in there that I think is really important for people to recognize. And I don't think everybody knows this about journalism. There are people who do what's called straight news, journalists. And then there are analysts who are paid to analyze what the journalists write about or report. And then there are commentators who reflect from a particular viewpoint on what the analysts have said about what the journalists have observed. And so I don't think that everybody recognizes that. Everybody actually thinks that editorial, you know, is supposed to be totally captured on the editorial page. That's not true anymore. And so I think for folks who want there to be clean lines between journalists, analysts, and commentators, those are now all blurred, and you've got to recognize that there is some level of editorial commentary even in the news you're reading. And that's the part that we don't like. That's the part that we resist, because we want news to be news and we want commentary to be commentary. And in our entertainment-driven culture, they've all blended together.
Yeah, it's well said. And yet the people are still humans trying to work through this. And so your point of even in places of disagreement, and we have such a lack of civility that seems to be raging through our headlines these days, that one step we can take is even, again, if we disagree and we understand different news outlets are maybe focusing on different facts of the story to shape the story itself and conflate commentary with news. And we can be really frustrated by all those things. And I think there's reason to be so at the end of the day. But yet our call is not to just sit back in frustration. It is to extend grace, to pray, and to come around people.
Absolutely. So that would be my encouragement today. I want people to be praying for those who serve in local media in particular, because those are the folks who were actually targeted in this particular event. We're talking about people who, you know, reported on high school baseball games. And we want there to be this level of local media. Next week, when we celebrate our independence as a nation, we're gonna read and we're gonna reflect on the Declaration of Independence. Guess where one of the very first papers that the Declaration of Independence was ever reproduced?
I'm guessing Baltimore.
Yeah, this paper, the predecessor of this paper, published on July 5th, 1776, the Declaration of Independence. And so we're talking about a local media outlet, a local journalism outlet that's been around since the whole idea of protecting the freedom of the press, you know, even came into the hearts and minds of people we now call Americans. And so let's be people who are really encouraging. Let's actually, you know, reach out today to somebody in your local media outlet, somebody who reports on local stuff in your community, because they're the ones who are now afraid. They don't have the layers of protection that some larger media outlets have, and they feel very, very vulnerable today.
It's Carmen LaBurge of Connecting Faith, and of course we can be praying for the families that have been deeply impacted by this tragedy that took place yesterday as well. There's lots we can do as Christians. Carmen, thanks for joining us on these Friday mornings. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll get into some of the other news of the week, and of course that is the vacancy on the Supreme Court. It's Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner. Be back in just a minute. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and we are joined on Faith Radio Mornings by Carmen LaBurge, the host of Connecting Faith. And Carmen, you do such a great job of thinking through these headlines and how they then begin to impact our daily life and how we can, as Christians, respond to all of what we see in the world. And of course, there was a pretty earth-shaking, I think that's not, that wouldn't be an exaggeration, moment of the Supreme Court where, of course, there's rumblings that Anthony Kennedy might be stepping down or retiring at some point, but the timing of it just before the midterms, in which the Republicans still have control of Congress and can kind of bring through the next appointee at whoever they would like at this point. It was pretty earth-shattering this week for both sides. There was actual visceral crying on some sides of the aisle relative to this announcement. So what are we seeing here? What are the implications of Anthony Kennedy's retirement?
So there's probably a lot of people listening who are saying to themselves, wow, I'm not even sure that I knew there was a Kennedy on the court.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that, you know, when we begin to think about the Supreme Court, we have probably been talking more about the U.S. Supreme Court in recent years than people have maybe in the past generation. And there's a reason for that. The court, which is supposed to literally judge the law, has moved into lawmaking. And when that started happening, when the court moved into making law instead of just judging what was or was not constitutional, people became far more interested in who was serving on the court. So it's supposed to be this politically nonpartisan body. And instead, it is a body of people who now is very partisan and judged in advance on how they will judge, which is really Like, prejudgment is actually not something that's supposed to be true of justices. And yet, all the conversation, every part of the conversation on both sides of the aisle right now is about whether or not Anthony Kennedy will be replaced on the U.S. Supreme Court by a pro-life judge. So that's really, you know, when we talk about if this is going to come down to one issue, that is the one issue this is going to come down to. And the reason, Peter, that you see people very exercised on both sides of the aisle about this, and why you see, like, literally, like, open despair and grief on the part of those who are pro-choice, is that President Trump has committed to naming, you know, justices to the Supreme Court who align with a pro-life view. And so what is really now in play is the reversal or the overturning of the Roe v. Wade decision legalizing abortion in 1973.
It's going to be an incredible couple of years ahead. I mean, you know, I grew up in an era where abortion was just part of the social landscape and it was sort of the assumed reality. And just even watching some of the changing views and the statistics that have come out recently from Pew Research, that people's attitudes are really changing as technology has enabled us to see the viability of the fetus in the womb, and the technology is really changing. And people's views are changing, too, where most people are not supporting any longer second and third trimester abortion. And there's still support for first trimester, but it's the evolving views and where we are with the justices in the court. It's going to be a really interesting couple of years ahead.
So it's interesting that you reference the trimester period of time, because that actually is what was created in the Roe v. Wade decision. Mm. We had no language prior to the Roe v. Wade decision about viability, and certainly not any sense that viability would be judged based on a certain, you know, like we can break a pregnancy up into three periods of time and we're going to call those trimesters, and you can, you know, it's reasonable to have an abortion in the first trimester, a made-up word, because now we have viable children. You frankly don't even have to have a womb anymore,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right?
So, you know, and so now how are we going to judge when life begins? And so now you're getting fetal heartbeat legislation in some places across the country. It's being tried in Iowa. And so if it's true that at the point in time that we can detect a fetal heartbeat, there is recognizable human life, then we're not talking about the first trimester. We're talking about just a handful of weeks.
Mm.
And so I do think that that is the debate we're going to have as a nation. Here's what I want to say to people who are who right now are feeling very, very strongly one way or another about our conversation. Let us be very, very clear this morning that we recognize there's lots of Christians who have had abortions.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And let's also recognize that it is a sin, but it's not unforgivable. No sin is unforgivable. You know, if this is something that is a part of your story, we are in no way suggesting that there's not redemption that's possible. So let's be clear about that. I do think, though, that folks who have experienced abortion are going to have to participate publicly in this conversation. And they're going to have to tell people what the impact of that abortion has been on their Christian walk and on their family. Because I have heard those stories in private conversations, but those people are going to have to come forward, both men and women, and talk about the grief, the real grief, and the post-traumatic stress that is attached to abortion that we just don't talk about very often.
Mm, Carmen, those are beautiful words. We talk often in some of the classes that I teach here at the University of Northwestern that whatever we've engaged with in our life, that if we can't find healing and hope and salvation at the cross and in the empty tomb, then whatever that thing is more powerful than the cross and the tomb. And that just isn't the case. And it doesn't mean God waves these magic wands or is a genie in the bottle and we pray one time and we feel great again. But it does mean the process of forgiveness and salvation and hope and all of these things as we interact with God's redemptive resources that are ever at hand in our lives, that we can begin to experience the healing of our past and hope for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, you know, just as a walk off on this conversation about the Supreme Court, this is actually why elections matter. If people are wondering, you know, why there was such advocacy, you know, among evangelical Christians in particular, for the candidacy of one person, It's because that person was in all likelihood not going to name just one Supreme Court justice. That would be Neil Gorsuch, but at least one more. And there's every chance that the sitting president is going to have the opportunity to name probably a third Supreme Court justice, because there's at least one member of the bench that's, you know, getting quite aged.
Mm. Carmen, time is short. It always goes too fast. What's happening on Connecting Faith here later today?
Hey, one of the things we're going to talk about is this sounds super sexy, I know, but we're going to talk about the impact of tax reform on charitable organizations and churches, because it's actually starting to show.
It's going to be I mean, I love it. Logan's hot and bothered in the studio actually right now. Hallie and I are going to have a little date afternoon and listen too.
Carmen, that is not appropriate. Tax reform is just that may be a little too risque.
Because we're all paid by charitable organizations to do what we do,
Indeed. This
actually matters.
Oh, Carmen, it's a great topic. I love it. We'll catch it here in just a few hours. Thanks for joining us on Faith Radio Mornings. We always appreciate your point of view here.
Thanks, Peter.
It is 27 minutes past the hour. We'll take a break for Lighten Up and the news and come back for the second half of our hour with Justin Gibney, who is a great friend of the show. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few. 31 minutes past the hour. And, Logan, I don't know if you know this, but other news headlines, there is a heat dome forming over the Midwest. And Hartford, don't worry. We're sending it your direction here in a day or so. But I think it's supposed to be about 187 degrees or something like that in Waterloo and Minneapolis, Madison. But what we're really excited about is one of our affiliates, Duluth, on the shores of Lake Superior, that they're not going to get much warmer than 70, 75 degrees from what I understand.
Very rarely do I think the residents of Duluth get to say, oh boy, am I glad it's colder here than everywhere else in the state.
And you're going to try to put in a window air conditioner today. I get it. And if it doesn't work, I'm sending you to Duluth. And your love language is what, Logan?
I think my first love language is physical touch.
Okay, so greet Logan with a hug as he crosses over the border in Duluth. Let's take a break for news. We'll come back for the second half of our hour. Author and president of Cornerstone University, Joe Stoll, is talking to us this morning about how people count and people matter.
Christ's leadership is that people count. So it's harder to lead an organization where you're really valuing people. It's much easier to lead an organization where people are cogs in the wheels and they're only instruments to get the big bottom line done and get the big success done. And they really don't count. The leader counts because it's his industry or her industry. And they get to get all the applause, but the minions, you know, the people, the slaves who are doing the oars down in the galley, they don't count. That's easier. That's easier to run a business like that or to run a ministry like that. But to run a ministry where people actually count, and one of your visions is not just to build a big business, to build better people. And working to build people up as they are serving the enterprise. There's so many illustrations of why character-driven leadership is so much more challenging, but in the end, so much more rewarding.
That is author and president of Cornerstone University, Joe Stoll. If you want to catch that entire segment, head to myfaithradio.com. You can search for effective leadership or people count to catch all of that. We'll be back in a minute here on Faith Radio Mornings, and we'll be joined by friend of the show, Justin Gibney, to talk about the AND Initiative and campaign, what he's a part of, and the work that he's doing in urban areas. So stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute.
The local church is under attack like never before in a culture that rejects Christ and the Bible. This is Jim Garlow. Don't sit on the sidelines. If that sounds trite in this era of declining church attendance, then I'm guilty as charged. It's easy to criticize the church for not being relevant, and that may be true in some cases, but it's also an excuse to opt out, to stay comfortably uninvolved. Imagine what our communities would be like without the contribution churches make to society and culture, to families and neighbors. So many of us live in a culture of advantage that was formed by biblical values. Some have even died and are dying for those values. Be a part of what's taking place in communities all across the country by people committed to supporting and encouraging their local church. There's more at jimgarlow.com. Live out your faith.
It is 38 minutes past the hour here on the 29th of June. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner. And we are joined on the line at this time by a friend of the show, Justin Gibney of the AND campaign. Good morning, Justin.
Hey, Peter, how's it going? Good morning.
I'm doing well. Hey, say, you know, before we get into some of the work you're doing in AND campaign, which I think is so helpful for our listeners, kind of carving out space in the political sphere, I have to ask, I'm a college football guy. We don't talk a lot of football here, but you played for Vanderbilt, if I remember correctly, in the early 2000s.
That's correct.
So, you know, the Crimson Tide was not the machine it was back then as it is now. Do you take any sort of solace or glory in their ongoing defeat year after year, you know, when they don't win the national title?
Not at all. I usually try to stick with the SEC. So if there's SEC teams in there, I usually try to root for them. So it's not a problem.
So for the work you're doing down in the Atlanta area, Justin, I'm just compelled by some of the language. We talk often on the show that though we are involved in the news and the politics of the day as Christians, we're really called to live a different way of life and carve out different space in this. Just remind our listeners what you do in the AND campaign.
Sure. The AND campaign is basically a coalition of urban Christians, but not exclusively, who are determined to kind of disrupt the socio-political arena with the compassion and the conviction of Jesus Christ. And really our message is this, that as Christians, we should be involved in politics because it's a great opportunity to actually look after our neighbor and care for our neighbor through policy and all these different things. But we have to do it a different way. And I think Jesus provides us with a perfect example of how it's not just about love. It's not just about truth. It's the combination of those things. And so we talk a lot about focusing on justice and biblical values. For whatever reason, in our political space, we've separated love and truth. We separated justice and biblical values as if you have to represent one and not the other. And our whole message through the AND campaign is that it's both. It's not one or the other. It's love and truth, compassion and conviction, justice and biblical values. And by placing those things together as the gospel does, then we can have a greater effect in the socio-political arena.
Well, and what you talk about actually could be, in theory, a unifying message even across the political spectrum, right? To recognize that political parties are not either inherently Christian or inherently not Christian, that we really could come together, and even the Christian message that is bigger than any political party could bring the parties together on some level.
I mean, absolutely, especially for Christians. We're not saying that someone can't be a Democrat or a Republican. But the gospel and the common ground we have through the gospel should mean a lot more to us than all this partisanship and ideology, which is really flawed in the first place.
You know, we were looking at some of the headlines this week, and we're seeing some writings in which some journalists and some commentators, analysts are talking about that maybe we're on the verge of a new civil war. It may not be as big and significant as that of the 1800s, but they're starting to get to be this language put out there that the beginnings of a civil war are starting. What are you seeing at the ground level of where you're working? Are the tensions beginning to boil over a little bit?
Oh, yeah. The tension is real. And we need to be very careful about where we're at. A lot of people's response in my space to the Trump administration and some of the things that they are doing is a call for an end of civility. It's a call to say, no, the rules have to change because certain people believe that things have gotten so bad that we need to play by different rules. And the AND campaign's message has been hold up. Wait a minute on that. And just trying to help people really understand what a civil society is about. It's about being able to talk through issues, even issues where we fundamentally disagree and think it may even be a life or death issue. That civility is a lot more is a lot better way to go about it than kind of force. And I want people to know that, you know, when you end civil society, really you're putting force in the place of that, and you can go to the level of a civil war. And what's surprising to me, Peter, is that a lot of the people that are calling for an end to civil society are the people that are the primary beneficiaries of a civil society. If society is not civil and you're not prepared for a society where force kind of rules the day, then you're not going to have a voice at all. And I don't think people understand exactly what that means and how that will push a lot of people out of the space of having any type of influence on what's going on.
Those are really important words, I think, Justin, because we could begin to almost wish for this sort of civil war idea. And then maybe, you know, if we're on one side of the spectrum, we'd win the war and get our way. But boy, if history teaches us anything, and even some of the current realities in countries around this world where there is civil war, sometimes there's ethnic cleansing going on. It's just these are such difficult places. We really don't want to step towards this threshold, right?
Yeah, I think we've just taken civility for granted, and we need to be very clear. One of the things the AND campaign is trying to do is just be very clear on what civility is. So when you ask me about civility, I think of the civil rights movement. I don't think civility means that you're always just quiet and docile and passive. That's not what it means to me. But I do think it has timing has place in there. Tone and posture have a place. There's times where we can scream and protest and do all those things. I think those things can be necessary in a civil society. But we don't run up on – we don't bum rush people. We don't spit on people. We don't kick them out of restaurants and things of that nature. That's crossing the line. And so we just have to be very clear on what we mean by civil society. Because I'll say this. I think sometimes on the right, that call for civility has been used to mean more docility. And hey, just be quiet right now. Just let things go and not really make a ruckus. I don't think it's about not making a ruckus. But I do think there's a line that shouldn't be crossed.
Yeah, and of course, we've seen some of that over the, you know, even the 2 years of the president being in office and the campaign, sometimes using language our president did of, I wish I could punch that person in the face, or they might need that sort of thing. We obviously have the recent comments from Maxine Waters around harassment, and these things do cross line and they do impact the way we think about each other. And so how can Christians have an alternative message that has as loud of a voice in shaping the way we think about each other as sometimes our politicians do? Are there things we can do as believers?
Yeah, well, we just have to lead by example. You know, sometimes we can complicate these conversations a little too much. And so whatever issue, think of the issue that makes you the most upset. And when it comes to addressing that issue, make sure that you address it civilly. Mm. Make sure that you listen and you're respectful to your opposition. Make sure that you actually are informed about what's going on and police your side. So I can be very passionate about an issue. But there are times when I need to tell people on my side, hey, you know, cool down. That's not the way to handle it. And when others see you doing that, they're going to be more likely to respond in kind. And so it's really about leading by example, being civil on some of the things that make you the most upset. That's when it really matters. And I think that's when other people can take that example and do better themselves.
It's Justin Gibney. Those are great words to think about. What really hooks me and what sets me off? And if I can think about that and sort of even just take a breath and be civil in those moments, that would be a great example moving forward. Say, we're 14 minutes before the top of the hour. We will take a short break. And Justin, when we come back, I would love to just talk a little bit about the importance of rectifying injustice in our world and the social justice conversations and how we can do that without having anger underpinning that, but that a desire for love and for wholeness, and that is part of the Christian faith. So we'll take a short break. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. Dr. Peter Kapsner. We'll be back in just a minute. It is 11 minutes before the top of the hour. It's Faith Radio Mornings, and we have Justin Gibney of the AND campaign on the line, a regular contributor to the show, as we're talking about sort of the uncivil, civil, soft civil war, whatever you want to name it, that seems to be developing. And Logan, during the break, you were giving me some stats that were interesting, because part of what happens here with Republicans and Democrats, I think, is we love to just categorize or label and assume that that was the deal, because then we don't have to deal with it anymore. You just label somebody, and you don't actually have to be in relationship. What were a couple of the stats that you noticed?
Yeah, there was a study published to the Journal of Politics recently that asked Republicans, what do you think about Democrats? And Democrats, what do you think about Republicans? And it was so interesting because there were these incredible misconceptions. They asked Democrats, how many Republicans do you think make more than $250,000 a year? And the Democrats said probably 44%. And in actuality, it's only 2%.
Interesting.
And on the other side, they asked Republicans, how many Democrats do you think identify as gay or bisexual or whatever? And they said probably 38%. Well, the reality is only 6%. So somehow we have aligned our political leanings with our identity. And so you think to yourself, well, if that person's a Republican, they must be rich and out of touch with the world, so I'm not going to talk to them. Or if they're Democrat, they must believe in gay marriage, so they're out of touch. I'm not going to talk to them.
Yeah, and so, Justin, I would love your comments on that, about what you find, too, about the importance of actual relationship and to just stop categorizing and labeling each other if we're going to restore some civility in this.
Yeah, that's right. And really, if that's going to happen, I truly believe it has to happen within the church first. Mm. If we're going to be an example of healing, then we have to heal ourselves and deal with the racial divide in the church and also the socio-political divide that goes right along with that. And until we can do that, it's going to be hard for us to have a credible witness In the public square.
Yeah, it's such an important thing. As you mentioned, we start as a church. If we can model this as a church, then there gets to be a witness that shines a bit of light into the world to it as well. And Justin, before the break, we were just talking about those issues that may make us angry or sort of set us off internally. And of course, matters of injustice, understandably, are very, very concerning and I think cause a lot of anger and when there's not a sense of hope. And it's one of those things our country has struggled with for a number of years and generations, actually. And so my question for you is how do we not maybe have anger, as understandable as it is, underpinning the social justice conversations, that there can be a peaceable conversation relative to it as we move forward together in this?
I think everything we do has to be aspirational. If you look at the civil rights movement, these are people who are going through, the Jim Crow South, who were, being beaten, who were, being treated all kinds of ways, and still somehow, which is only by God, were able to be aspirational and loving. And I think that's an excellent example for us to follow. But at the same time, for those who are kind of people who don't necessarily understand the justice conversation, or when they hear justice, they kind of get a little scared and think Marxism and all that stuff. You've got to listen. If someone does get a little bit upset, you need to be humble enough to hear them out and want to do better. We have to be a lot more humble and understanding with each other. Just because someone gets upset or, they don't know exactly how to express themselves, as a Christian, we need to be able to put our own pride aside, because a lot of times that's what it is. Both sides go into this conversation trying to protect their tribe. And if we go into that conversation like that, then we're not going to get very far. But I think there needs to be humility to listen, humility to accept blame if it's there. And even if you don't think you deserve any blame, be humble enough to hear people out as they try to express what they're going through. I don't think that's much to ask. But we've had a hard time getting to that place. So, yes, there's a responsibility on those who think they have been treated unjustly to be aspirational. But understand that that's easier said than done. And for others, sometimes you just have to listen and hear people through their pain.
Those are incredible words, Justin. And you're talking about a humility to have with one another and a patience for one another. And that, boy, when you are on the side of the victim of injustice and maybe the perpetrator of it, to bring those two together. There's a theologian I studied, his name was Jürgen Moltmann, and he said the cross was both for the oppressor and the oppressed, but there's different conversations relative to that and what the cross stands for those who are doing the oppressing and for the oppressed, but it's for all of us together. And the church could model that about how to do this well together, right?
Oh, absolutely. And just remember, our lives are, we're supposed to be witnesses. We're supposed to be serving and disciples. Our lives are not about protecting us and our own reputations all the time, right? We can't go into these conversations thinking, hey, I don't want, I want to make sure that my people look like they're blameless as we leave this conversation. No, we're there to make things right and to mend things. And so absolutely, we have to find a way to communicate with one another that, number one, is civil, but understanding, that seeking to understand what the other person is saying, even if at the end of the day, we don't completely agree. When you build relationship, when you build understanding and the person knows you have their best interest in mind, then you're getting somewhere. And I think at the end of the day, it starts with that relationship. But at the end of the day, we have to be able to work together and say, hey, I don't care where you're from as a Christian. Criminal justice should matter to you. Mm. All these issues, poverty should matter to you. Are you willing to step out of your comfort zone and advocate for people who aren't your next door neighbor, but are still your neighbor?
Yeah, I'm compelled by the idea of love in the scriptures being defined as I will suffer the loss internally of things within myself so that others can be made whole. And boy, what an important message it would be, right, as opposed to trying to grasp after my own sense of entitlement and happiness in our country. What would it mean if we began to be willing to suffer loss on our half so that others could be made whole?
That's right.
So I'd be curious, we just have a minute left. What are you seeing just sort of, again, real practical steps that people have taken in the ad campaign that's been really helpful for bringing some civility back to this?
Yeah, I say number one is seek out other diverse Christians, other diverse churches. If you're a pastor, seek out a church across town that, maybe majority black or majority white, and start having those conversations. Have dinner. start having forums about issues that you normally don't talk about, and understand that there may be some misunderstandings there, and it's not an easy, these aren't easy conversations to have, but reach out and try to understand. Go to some forums that you might not go to. Reach out to communities that you might not have reached out to, because that's what we're called to do. I mean, if you look at Jesus' life, he was always talking to people that the Pharisees didn't necessarily want him talking to or think, you know, that he should be involved with. But that's exactly what he did. And if we're not doing that, if we're just staying within our lifestyle enclave, then we're not being disciples.
Great words of advice. Justin, thank you for joining us this morning. Really helpful to bring some civility and sanity back to this conversation. Have a great rest of your morning.
Take care, Peter. Thank you.
We're about 4 minutes before the top of the hour. We'll take a short break, and we'll wrap up our first hour and set up where we're headed next. Stay with us. It's Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner. Logan, I love what Justin had to say at the end of that conversation. Just a practical tip. It does start by having to actually be in relationship with people unlike yourself, whatever that looks like. But this idea of having dinner with people, inviting people into the home and sharing that space, I mean, what an important place to flatten out these conversations.
And it's such an easy way to do it. You're going to have dinner in your home every night anyway. And for the opportunity for someone to come in and see what your home is like, see what your family is like, that just puts them in a cultural experience that could very well be very different from theirs. And especially if you invite someone to dinner, they'll likely invite you back, and now you're in their life. And there's something so important about not just seeing them at church every Sunday or seeing them once a week at that baseball meeting. It's about seeing what their life is really like and connecting with them in that way.
And it doesn't suddenly mean that we agree on all things in life, but somehow that relationship, when we lead with that first, it takes so much of the sting out of these conversations where we just label and shout insults and we're not actually walking this out. I can't think of a better Christian witness than sharing meals together. So it's 2 minutes before the top of the hour. Stay with us. When we come back, we'll be with Gary Stratton, who will talk all things Hollywood with us.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.